What is it? What are we doing?
Bibliomancy.
I don't know what that is. Resurrecting dead books.
I mean,
that should have been on the
from
recording.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
I mean, I am recording right now, so like I can just put that in.
Yeah. Yeah, bibliomancy, the art of resurrecting dead books.
Resurrecting dead
Wrong.
Books. Exactly.
Yeah. Is this how we start the episode now? We're just
I feel like we just started mid-conversation.
We just started it mid-conversation. That's okay.
That's good. Yeah, I like it.
Hey,
like
Sarah, what are we recording today?
Yeah. We're recording Word Warren today. And we're going to talk about some books. Okay. I'm your host, Sarah. With me today is Justin.
Hello.
And Hannah.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, in case you didn't guess, we're talking about bibliomancy.
Bibliomancy. I kind of like that start of the episode. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Okay. The definition of bibliomancy is actually divination by books. So, because mancy comes from mancia, which means divination by means of.
What does divination mean?
It's like fortune telling or to like
prophecy
and like future, like trying to
bibliomancy. So reading, like determining the future through
reading books,
fiction or nonfiction.
Typically religious.
Religious. Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Yeah. But,
oh gosh, you guys are in for a story.
But
oh boy.
But more and more nowadays, it's like from fiction. From any kind of book that you like to read. Typically, it's a book that you are familiar with also. Like, so, something that maybe that you, like, have read multiple times or whatever.
And then you pick up, like, hey, this is leading me to the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, typically, for, like, the steps for doing bibliomancy is to, like, hold your book upright and then just let it fall open.
Uh-huh.
And then you, like, do circles with your hand until you find a passage. And then you're supposed to, like, read that. Define some sort of meaning
all right
from it.
There's a subsection, like a sub, not subgenre, but we're talking about books, and that's where my brain immediately went.
We'll call it a subgenre
of bibliomancy, which is called rhapsodomancy.
Oh yeah.
Which is bibliomancy but with poetry.
Yeah.
To where you could do the same thing but with a book of poetry, and then you read the poem that it falls open to and divine some kind of meaning from the poem, because that's what the universe needed you to understand today.
I see.
I like that a lot. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of that one.
Yeah, yeah. So
I have a fun joke. Okay. So the opposite of that would be like reading the sixth book in the Cuckoo's Calling series, and you're reading fiction, and you can flip it open to any page and see J.K. Rowling's past.
Oh no.
I have been having so much fun with that controversy.
Oh man.
You guys have read about that, right?
Oh no, I haven't.
So the Six Cuckoos Calling book is about I think it's an author who says some insensitive things online and then is attacked and targeted and doxxed. And so the hero of the book is going to save the person who's been attacked for just pointing out their
no
views
reason.
Online.
For no reason.
Yeah.
For no reason. It literally just reads like
everybody's picking
everybody.
On me.
Poor Joanne. Everybody's picking on her.
1,024 pages.
Oh my god.
For neo-noir that fiction.
Insanely long for a mystery novel. That is too long.
I read somewhere, I read a tweet where they were like, basically you can just pick up the new Cuckoo's Calling book and it's just basically Joanne telling you all the ways you can hurt her feelings.
it's too much. I don't know, like, whoever is managing her public image.
Right.
Really start, like, not only dropping the ball, but, like, throwing
the ball.
I kind
of probably know when she probably fired her editor.
I was going to say, I think that she's in the Anne Rice era of, I know what I'm doing. I'm a popular author. Everybody loves me. I know how to write books. I don't need anybody to tell me how to write. I think she's in that part of the Anne Rice cycle right now.
Yep. Hey, don't write a book making the hero the person that you are, but it's just don't rewrite your own history and reframe everything
also,
in a fiction novel.
People calling you out on your problematic behavior is not the same as doxing you.
Nope. Yeah.
I don't want to get controversial on this podcast, but I don't feel like that's a controversial stance there.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't,
like, yeah.
Like, if you, so. If you do something that's harmful to someone else, mm-hmm. and then people go, hey, what you did isn't cool. That is not doxing you. That is calling you on the carpet for your shitty behavior.
But she's rich, so she gets to do what she wants, and this isn't fair.
I know.
It's amazing, though. So yeah. That's my joke. Yeah. See, it's the opposite of bibliomancy.
It's the opposite of bibliomancy.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Thanks for setting me up with that.
Yeah, thank you're welcome. You. Yeah. You're welcome.
I didn't know how I was going to fit in bagging on her today, and that was so perfect. That just
awesome. Yeah. Amazing. Oh my God. Amazing.
I like that we can find mutual ground. Mm-hmm. We might not both love Poe, but we can find mutual ground there.
That's such a mm-hmm. it's such nonsense.
Yeah. Oh my, so bibliomancy.
So bibliomancy. Yeah.
Traditionally was used with religious texts, but right, but yeah. more and more it's mm-hmm. moving yeah.
which
into,
I find kind of funny. Because like when I was doing my research for this, like specifically in the Bible, like Deuteronomy says that fortune telling and divination is of the devil, and if you do it, you're like evil. So like the fact that people use the Bible to do bibliomancy.
Okay, but here's the thing. Okay, but here's the thing. Here's the thing.
I don't even think I'm allowed to comment on this. Anything I say is going to get cut out. So
Hannah, maybe even that was. Yeah.
Okay. You're not allowed to use means to divine things that aren't directly related to God.
Is that?
That's the line. So priests who are servants of God can use the Bible.
Oh, because it's up.
Ask God to divine God's will.
Mm-hmm.
That's not magic. That's God.
Mm. No, I get it. I get it. It's okay when I do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. That's about all I can say on it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm right for real. I don't think I can say anything here.
No. Yeah. But, yeah. So, yeah. Because I was specifically.
Almost all religions have a, like, do as I say, not as I do thing.
Right.
Like, where it's like, it's okay for us to do it because we're right, mm-hmm. but it's not okay for other people to do it because they're wrong.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, because this led to me because like okay, so I listened to a podcast called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text,
mm-hmm.
which is it's a minister and a rabbi, and they read Harry Potter as if it were a sacred text, like or whatever.
Okay,
it's pretty interesting because they also use different like ways of so sacred readings, like from so Lectio like. Talking about Lectio Divina is from a Christian practice of reading the Bible,
mm-hmm.
where you find a passage, you're supposed to read the passage, you like immerse yourself in the passage as if like you are a part of what mm-hmm. is going on in the book, and then you like contemplate, meditate, pray about it to like divine further meaning like
okay.
for your life. That's the steps of doing Lectio Divina.
I got.
And they use that to read Harry Potter, right? So, like, so they read a passage.
Okay.
They pretend like they're in the passage, that they're experiencing what's experiencing in the book itself.
Mm-hmm.
And they meditate and they try to divine some further meaning that is good, is like prescient to their life
prescient,
or whatever, I guess. Yes.
Okay.
So,
I mean,
like,
it's such a cool concept to me, and it's neat that it's come from like an actual religious practice and right. and become a little more secular
mm-hmm.
in the now.
Right, yeah.
Hey, Erica has a deck of cards called The Universe Has Your Back.
Okay.
And it's a positive affirmation card that you randomly pull
those.
Every morning.
That's
and it's tarot size, and you just, you know, flip your card and you meditate on whatever positive thing you're given
mm-hmm.
and you try to apply it to your day. And it's,
I mean, I pull a tarot card every morning, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like that's the same thing, right? Like you read into it and you divine what can positively affect your day or negatively affect it, I guess.
Yeah.
We're working on positivity at my house because we're both kind of grumps sometimes.
You know, I've found a lot of things, like specifically with tarot, a lot of people, certain cards, they find very negative meanings in them. And I've found that really, if you like read what the cards are about, even the ones that are traditionally like, oh, this is negative, they're not really negative. They're just challenges, or they're things to look out for, or they're like ways that you maybe change the way you do something today. Instead of, hey, go about your day as normal, it's like, hey, you might have some conflict today, so maybe brace yourself for that. Get ready for that. Take a deep breath. Do the things you need to do. Do some self-care.
Forgiveness before that.
Yeah.
Right?
Kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like attitude. Mindset matters.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about that, like the mindset matters and you choose people.
I don't succeed a lot of times. I'm just going to say that right out the bat, but I'm not saying that I'm like a positive person 100% of the time, because I am not.
I don't think that's it. I think knowing that there are 100 ways to look at each thing, and out of those 100 ways, right, 40 are probably I could argue them as correct.
Oh yeah.
Right. So find the one that hurts you the least, that is also correct.
Well, especially if you're talking about things like bibliomancy, like fortune telling, like anything like that. It is all about how you interpret the things that you are looking at that influence how you are going to view them.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if you're coming at something with a super negative mindset, it doesn't matter what that might mean. You're going to interpret it negatively.
Right? Yeah. Someone could be like, you're getting flowers today. And you'd be like, great, someone's going to hit me with roses.
Or right? like great, I'm going to die. Somebody's going to put those on my grave. Like, you know.
Oh, that's way better. Why do I think about getting hit with roses? What's wrong with me?
Like, oh, man.
Wait, what's wrong with you?
Listen. I have a lot of mental health problems.
Yeah. I think I blew the mic out laughing because I feel that.
My anxiety can give you a 10-step plan how anything that goes wrong in my day-to-day life can lead to my inevitable death.
Yeah.
10 steps from where we are now to death. That is, my brain can spiral so quickly into that.
Yeah. Yeah, my OCD can probably take me from not washing my hand to sepsis in 6.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
Nope, I got a cut on my side from that brake line, and I'm going to get infected. That's it, I'm dead.
I got you flowers. Why are you going to murder me?
Well, so bibliomancy.
Sorry. Yeah. This is how this episode is going to be. All of us are just chaotic today.
Exactly.
So, I'm with it.
Yeah, so that was just one of the things that I thought of, like, when I was thinking about bibliomancy, was that podcast that I listened to, because they also use other methods of sacred reading, which was, I'm probably going to mispronounce this because it's the Jewish tradition. Okay. Oh, so it's Havrusa or it's Havruta. I don't know. It depends on the, because one of them is spelled with an S and one version is spelled with a T. So Havruta or Havrusas. It means fellowship.
Means fellowship.
Yeah. And it basically is just a way of discussing. So they use it to learn the Torah.
Okay.
So they'll read like a passage, but they always do it in groups of at least two, like between 2 and 5 people. And so then you like read it and you like discuss what you think the passage meant. You typically ask a question about the passage to get an answer, but then you are the first one to also answer that question. So, and then just to get discussion, like talking about what it is, so that you can get further information about it.
Sort of group divination or academic divination.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of these are really just like introspective, like analyses of things. Which, I mean, we're humans. We like stories. We like magic. We like...
Which is like one of those things where it's like, I have never done bibliomancy or anything like that, but it's like, I read a lot, and reading often makes me think of things, which in a way is me, and it's proven that people who read more have more empathy for other people, and they have social awareness, I guess, of like the people around them.
Well, that was going to be something that I was going to bring up, was, aren't books all just a little bit of magic anyway?
Right.
Like when you really think about it, like stories make us see the world differently. Even if we're not reading them, even if we're not using bibliomancy to specifically pull out a passage that the universe thinks that we need to read or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
When we read a new book, it doesn't matter if it's good, it doesn't matter if it's bad, it doesn't matter anything about the book. It is going to intrinsically change us in some way.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of magic.
That's kind of
magic. You know, that's kind of the magic of words and the magic of people and the magic of stories. Of
stories and tell you.
I just read Shelter by, I don't know how to say the name. It's J-U-N-G space Y-U-N.
Okay.
Win.
Huh?
Wait, spell it again?
J-U-N-G.
Oh, J-U-N-G. Never mind.
And then space Y-U-N.
Okay. I don't know.
Hyung-Win? Hyung-Win? Something like that. Something.
Yeah, it's a popular fiction. It was. Okay. It became popular fiction a couple years ago. It's the saddest. It's top five sad books I've ever read.
Oh, wow.
It's hard. written in the form of a classic where, like, tragedy after tragedy to be overcome. But some of the trauma that this dude has, I can connect with.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me into moments in my past and, like, helped me look at it in a different way. And, I mean, what else can transport you into a moment in your past and make you see it a different way by just writing something on a page, right? Hey, look at this sentence and think about this fake guy doing it. And now, boom, time travel, right? Like, you're in this moment. Think about it differently because you do want to be this guy when you grow up. No. I don't.
Just finished reading Don't Date the Haunted.
Oh, okay. C. Ray Dark.
C. Ray Dark, yeah. It's a really silly nonsense book. I love her world building that she does. But even though it was a silly kind of, you know, lighthearted, maybe not low stakes book, but, you know, kind of low stakes.
Pretty low stakes, yeah.
In the grand scheme of things. There was still stuff in it that I identified with a lot. Like, the main character is super guarded and hard to trust other people and, like, stuff like that. And there's just certain parts that, like, aspects of the story of, like, no, you gotta let people in. You gotta be vulnerable with people to, like, be able to survive this kind of stuff. And then, you know, I don't know. It was really interesting. It was. Everything is introspective.
Yeah. I mean, it stands to reason that you're sitting there reading a book, basically thinking, like, I mean, it's all internal. It's all entirely internal. You're imagining looking these characters. At, you're like, oh, yeah.
Looking at printed ink and hallucinating.
Hallucinating vividly or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. That's all it is. I mean, books are all constantly flipping switches in my brain and changing dials. And it's, you know, there's all this adjustment you go through when you're thinking about other people's experiences or pain. And
for sure, yeah.
And I mean, and one of the, like, something I've been trying to apply to my life is something from Epictetus, who was one of the founders of Stoicism.
Okay.
And he was like, say to yourself what you would say to your neighbor. You know, have you lost your crops? Things will be okay, right? Say the same thing to yourself. And so reading books that where the person needs empathy really makes me want to flip that empathy, like, think about flipping that empathy back on myself, right? They went through what I went through. You know, what I'm feeling about them is maybe what I should feel about myself in that situation. Right. And because, you know, when you go through bad stuff, you blame yourself a lot.
It's
super helpful, super introspective, and it just grows you.
Yeah. Magic of books.
The magic of books.
So what we're saying is that bibliomancy is something that everybody does all the time.
All the time. Yeah. even if
you didn't realize it.
Yeah.
And even if you don't practice it in the method of, like, the book is picked, the book is dropped on its spine, the book is, you blindly choose a passage. I was reading something about people using, like, fiction books instead of, like, religious texts. And what they would do is, like, roll a dice or something to randomize the book they pick in their library. Then they'll randomize, like, what page it is and what passage and stuff. And so it's all, you know, but they're fiction books that maybe hold a special place for them. And they're like, what's the passage that it's going to be this time?
Right. That's cool. Yeah.
I like that. And I think that it would be super cool to do an exercise like that, but to push yourself to positively position the passage. And maybe that would help you gain that skill when you're not reading, right?
Right.
Like, learning to look at things like, hey, I need to decipher this in a positive way, but I'm used to deciphering it in a negative way. Maybe practicing that every day will help you. Like, hey, maybe I can do that thing with this so I won't be so mad.
One of the things on the wiki page that I thought was interesting, which I have pulled up right now, is another variant requires the selection of a random book from a library before selecting the random passage from the book. Specifically, if the book has fallen down off of a shelf on its own.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
And the English poet Robert Browning used this message to ask about the fate of his attraction to Elizabeth Barrett.
I remember I read this one too.
He was at first disappointed to choose the book The Ciritelli's Italian Grammar, but upon randomly opening it, his eyes fell on the following sentence of, "If we love in the other world as we do in this, I shall love thee to eternity." And they got married.
How'd that go?
They got married.
I mean, but how did it go?
I don't know. I mean, this was, who knows how happy marriages were back then.
They weren't.
I did enjoy from the Wikipedia page where it had a list of books that mentioned bibliomancy in them, which was kind of funny. Because Michael Strogoff, it's an 1876 Jules Verne novel, has bibliomancy because he's like, I don't know, he's judged to be guilty of something and is sentenced to be blinded.
Oh, yeah.
Because the judge decided to like open some random book and the passage he read was, he will no more see the things of this earth. And so then he's like, okay, I'm gonna blind you or whatever.
It doesn't surprise me that it's in a Jules Verne book because any long nonsense word that he can find, he packed into his book. Sorry, Jules.
There's even the Book of Webster's, which is from 1993, which is about a sociopathic protagonist who uses the dictionary to guide his actions. So he just opens the dictionary randomly.
That's not a mental health crisis. I'm going to open the dictionary and do whatever word it says.
Whatever word it says.
You should see a doctor.
Oh, yeah. And then Philip K. Dick. That one was really interesting because it's like The Man in the High Castle.
Mm-hmm.
They do, so it specifically from I Ching,
mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that's how you pronounce it, is they do the bibliomancy and it takes place a lot in the book itself. And in fact, he used bibliomancy of the I Ching to write The Man in the High Castle.
Wow.
So that one's very like layered there.
Oh, wow. He made some money off that.
It's like Inception bibliomancy. Right,
Inception bibliomancy.
Yeah.
That's too much bibliomancy.
We got some bibliomancy for your bibliomancy to put in your bibliomancy.
Hit my book.
That one was one that was the most interesting.
It's interesting that there are so many tales and stuff that actually use bibliomancy when I never actually heard of it before.
Right?
Like until you were like, I want to talk about bibliomancy. I was like, I don't know what that is. I mean, we necromancy for books. We established that
yeah.
at the beginning of this episode. Reviving dead books, which I mean, we do that with movies anyway. So
and they are the movies are like the weird zombie version of a dead risen book.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It's not quite right.
Can we make? Listen, I know that there's really, I know that the saying is like there's no new stories. There's mm-hmm. just new ways of telling the same mm-hmm. story. But can we please tell some new stories?
Yes.
And stop retelling the same story over and over again. Yes.
Someone find a way.
Like I'm okay with having the same plot.
Sure.
I just want new characters. That's
right,
all I want.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the same characters.
And some new situations that lead us through the plot and some novel experiences here and there.
Harrison Ford was Indiana Jones, and that's good, and we don't need to do more Indiana Jones. At least not remake those movies.
There's so much. I love the Indiana Jones, right? Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't care if they make movies because they did so much crazy stuff in the books.
Right? I just don't want them to remake.
Right.
For like Temple.
I want those to just be, that's Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, and we don't need to remake it. There's other Indiana Jones insanity out there.
There's mm-hmm. plenty more
that we could go.
There's so much more. There's dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. I mean, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull just scratched the surface, right?
And everybody lost their stuff. It was.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, right? Like, the original, like the trilogy, for people who hadn't read
mm-hmm.
Indiana Jones, that was really more like archaeology with just a touch of magic.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff like, ooh, spooky, ancient, cursed magic, woo. And then you got Crystal Skull and they were like, aliens.
Yeah.
And that was so far off of what all the other movies had been that everyone was like, what?
I've heard this argument before, and I totally feel like everybody forgot that Nazis melted. And that, like, Nazis melting and aliens, I think aliens are more...
But that was woo, pharaoh magic. That was like the curse of the mummy and the Ark of the Covenant, and that was like magic. That wasn't aliens, it was magic.
Like, aliens are nearly science. Like that.
Listen,
I mean, nearly. We're gonna get there someday. Once we get strong enough tools to find them, they'll be like,
"We
hey,
don't have
anything.
Room for your science in our fantasy books."
Yeah. I forgot we're talking about bibliomancy. Yeah.
Get your science out of here.
We don't want it, and we don't need it.
I'll just drop this book on the ground and I'll do whatever that says.
Yeah.
Coming that's up, not mental illness. Leave me alone. That's
coming up here with your logic. How dare you?
Just Indiana Jones logic. That's all I'm here.
I'm just saying.
It's fair. I mean, no matter how I feel, the way that the nation reacted, right? The way that the world reacted, I'm not in the majority.
I would love like Indiana Jones dinosaur stuff.
Yeah. Me
would
too.
Love that kind of stuff. Like let's leave the Nazis over where they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Let's go somewhere else.
Let's leave like ancient Egypt alone. I feel like we've crossed the line over like appropriation and I don't know, just I feel like ancient, like the Egypt mania, what do they call that?
Yeah.
Was it the Egypt mania happened at the exact same time we're being the least sensitive to all cultures mm-hmm. possible? Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that we treated it well. And I just want to back off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean...
It was a museum.
No, it belongs with the native people that created it.
Yeah, Hobby Lobby.
Wow. Since we're already on this track, it reminds me of the Tumblr account Bad Jokes with John, where he was just like, the only reason there's still ancient pyramids in ancient Egypt is because they were too big to fit inside the British National Museum.
Ooh. Truth, though. Truth.
So true.
They could have made that shippable.
It makes me think of, like, even like the Metropolitan Museum of Art, they have warehouses and warehouses full of ancient artifacts that are just moldering there because they don't have enough people
The thing that makes me angry about museums
is just like
is that we now have the technology to make nearly perfect replicas mm-hmm. of every single artifact that exists.
Mm.
There is no reason we can't make replicas and give the artifacts back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know what makes
I have
me
a
mad
lot of
it.
Feelings about this. Carmen Sandiego
so
is right, and we should be stealing stuff from museums and giving it back to the people who want it.
I mean, I listen to the Revisionist History by Walt Malcolm Gladwell covered museums and their stuff because, like, they have all kinds of accounting tricks to get away with, like, just keeping all of that mm-hmm. stuff and not accounting for it or making up whatever outrageous number they want to put to it because mm-hmm. it's priceless and it's like, but it's sitting in a warehouse and no one can look at it. No one can appreciate it.
We can't let the light touch it because it will disintegrate.
Yeah. It's like,
cool. Then it's worthless.
Yeah. Give it back to whoever you bought it from.
Yeah. Yeah. Give it back to the people who want it. And if everything that everybody doesn't need back.
Bold of you to.
You didn't even buy it.
I was going to say, bold of you to assume it was bought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh man.
Okay.
Think about if you go back to each piece of that art. I mean, I wonder what the percentage of murder to art is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, like how many pieces of art, right, had someone die mm-hmm. in their acquisition somewhere down the line?
Right. Yeah.
Ooh, ooh, okay.
I mean, bibliomancy, but like.
Yeah. Also, I think they should build more museums if they have extra stuff that they can't give away. And then they should take some of those museums and put them where they're accessible mm-hmm. to everybody.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to New York. I'm not going to go to
New
York. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's make museums in different places, too. Yeah. There's lots of land, lots of property.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put stuff in it and let's enrich our minds. Mm-hmm. Not hoard it and let it waste.
And hoard it. Yeah, right. Exactly. That's the worst part about it. Yeah.
Like dragons.
Gold dragons, right? Gold dragons are the hoarders, are they?
I think all dragons. All I don't dragons know. Hoard. It depends. It depends on...
And don't even get me started on wyverns and worms.
I have so many opinions. Anyway,
I know. I looked you right in the eyes when I said it.
Okay. All right. That was a fun discussion.
That was a fun discussion. We went all over the place, but I liked it. So, I guess, reading? What are we reading? What are we... What kind mm-hmm. of bibliomancy are we partaking in currently?
Let's see. What am I currently reading?
I just finished all that Shelter book, and I'm real sad.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real sad book. Just... Every step of it. So it was a really, really good, compelling book. And I wanted to know what happened. And I cared mm-hmm. about the people, even though they were unlikable, which is a very difficult thing for me. But it is so sad that if you are not in the headspace to deal with, like, I don't know, secondary trauma, I wouldn't read it. Mm-hmm. But if you are, you know, all geared up for some cries and some just like hard self-reflection.
Okay.
I
just, like I said, I finished reading Don't Date the Haunted, which... Hilarious. If you haven't heard of the book, it takes place in the fictional world of novel, where places like New York and London and Manhattan are fictional.
Yes.
They don't exist. Yes. So in novel, the continents are divided up into genres. So there's like mystery and horror and romance and fantasy and all of this stuff. And people live in these different genres.
What is this book called again?
It's called Don't Date the Haunted.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
So the main character is from horror. The continent, I forget the town they're from, but like the capital of horror is Brimstone. Brimstone for sure. Horror.
Yeah.
For sure. And in horror, like the people constantly are living basically in a horror book. The cloud, the skies are constantly overcast. It's always thundering. There's, you know, everybody is affected by hauntings that they have to try and have to try and survive. And like most people don't live into old age in horror. They die from their hauntings and stuff like that. And so the main character leaves horror to try and get away from her hauntings and enrolls in a university in Hartford romance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Surrounded by all of these other people who are like native to romance or like from sci-fi and fantasy, and like it's the main character's like journey to try and get out of the horror survival mode and learn how to live with other people who don't see everything as an omen, but but stuff from horror follows her into romance.
Of course.
And so she has to teach these people who've never lived through something like this how to survive a haunting.
That sounds so good.
It's hilarious. It's so good. And like the way the characters talk, because, you know, everything is in genre fiction. Like, and so there's just so many things that like get said that are just so funny to read, but like are said so deadpan in the story. Mm-hmm. I love it. And it's a trilogy, and I have to read the other two now. I have to, but yeah,
that sounds really great.
It was great. There's a couple of heavy parts in it that I was not expecting like how light the rest of the book was. Yeah. Like there was some heavy stuff that happened and I was like, wow, but good book.
Did they wander in the land of classics? And
no, but I mean, it's half of a horror story, so
all right.
Bad stuff does happen.
Have you heard of Book Eaters?
No.
It's on my list. It's a book. It's a world where everybody sustains off of eating books.
Oh, wow.
And the type of book you eat sort of changes you. And they just, I think I'm remembering the synopsis loosely. I guess some babies are born and they have the hunger for horror. And nobody has had the hunger for horror before. Then it's the only thing that can sustain them. So there's these babies that are coming up on horror and are changing because what you're intaking is changing you.
I want to read that.
Yeah, it's on my list. I'm waiting to get it from Libby.
Oh, man.
But it's on the same page as yours, but this one sounds real sad.
This one's definitely more lighthearted humor. There's some, like I said, there are some heavy moments, but mostly it's kind of a YA romance kind of book.
I want something like that. After reading Shelter, like Shelter, I'd have to like do breathing exercises before I started.
And it's not super long either. It's more like a novella length than a full novel.
Sweet.
So it's a really fast read. I read it in like one afternoon, just sat down and tore through it, and it was really good.
I really want novellas to be a bigger thing.
Me too. I love them. Yeah. They're so easy to read.
Yeah.
We're missing an opportunity.
So nice to, be able to sit down and read a book in an afternoon instead of like, because right now I'm reading The Child of Light by Terry Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which isn't too long for a fantasy novel, but.
But when you got to quantify it like that, it's too long.
Yeah.
When you make excuses for it, as you describe how long it is, it's too long.
It's not too long for a fantasy novel.
It's really not that long.
It's not as long as the Six Cuckoos Calling.
Right, exactly. No, not at all.
I mean, when you smash a fiction book and a biography together, I guess.
Right. Kind of expands the content. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm reading it for book club.
Yeah.
So, and I don't really like to read epic fantasy, so to me, it's all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, epic fantasy, like, I like all the parts I like out of other books, and I do not like the epic fantasy part, right? So, like, if you stripped all the fantasy out and just told me that story in a different way, I'd like it, so.
And I like fantasy, but I don't always like epic fantasy.
Right.
Like, I like, I like bite-sized fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a big fan of that. I love magic and dragons and knights and sword fighting and wizards and all of that. But I don't want it to be, like, 500 pages. Yeah. I don't and want to read
history of the elven father's uncle's grandpa.
I love world building, but I don't want to read all of your world building. Right. Like, unless you want to publish a book that's just, hey, this is my world building, I will buy that book and I will read that book. But I don't want that in my fantasy novel.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me that the elves have this specific culture. You don't need to tell me why.
Yeah. Because of the third elf ever born.
Right.
And then they split. And you're like, hey, this elf is like a side character. He's just going to sell him beer and be gone.
And then be gone. The innkeeper was a dwarf of the line of, okay, Tolkien, calm down.
Yeah. All right.
We don't need the entire genealogy of this one. He's going to be in the book for half a page.
He will be in the movie for 3 hours.
Oh, yes.
No,
he's in the book for 20 pages.
That's right.
Because we have to tell about his genealogy, right?
He could have been in it for genealogy.
He could have been in it for less than a page. There's a paragraph of content that he has, but.
Would you like a room? Yes. He was a little rude. That's because you're a dwarf. Oh, got it.
Oh,
that's
wow.
all we need to know out of this.
That's dwarfist.
So that's really all I'm reading right now is that one. So.
And we've got The Book Club Just Happened.
Yes.
The new book club book is You Sexy Thing
by Kat Rambo.
And it sounds amazing. It
sounds so good.
I love seeing her name when I enter the books.
The tagline of Farscape meets The Great British Bake Off sold me on that book. I'm like, I have to read this. Yeah. This sounds amazing.
I'd watch that show. I'd watch that movie. I'd read that comic. I'd read that book.
Oh, my God. Like,
I'd listen to the podcast.
I'm ready for it. I'm going to have to pick that up before I leave for my trip because I want to read that also. Mm-hmm. I've got like 4 books that I'm bringing on my trip with me, and I don't know if I'll get to read all of them.
Because I honestly actually think that Kat Rambo is from the Pacific Northwest also. Like,
I think
they're from the Seattle area or something like that, which is probably why, because I found it at the library and then it was always checked out. And I just recently got a copy of it, like after months of trying to get a copy of it. So
I think she was too, because I think that we got a signed book once, and somebody had told me that we're going to get them in often because she signs around here.
Okay.
And then the YA book club is Kingdom of the Wicked by Carrie Maniscalco. I can't say her last name. It's a very long last name, but that sounds really cute too.
That one is that one like a Romeo and Juliet thing, or is it a...
No, it's like twin sisters, and one of them goes missing, or one of them dies, and the other one goes out to find her killer, and then gets kind of wrapped up in like dark magic or something like that. It's
kind of a witchy book.
Yeah, it's kind of a witchy book.
A little bit.
A little like witchy.
Yeah.
I'm like reading the Goodreads description right now. Having a computer right next to me is not a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's come in handy quite a few times already.
Yeah, it's very nice. Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah, I think that wraps us up for this. I mean,
yeah,
I don't really have any recommendations for bibliomancy because it's not really a...
Yeah.
I recommend not doing it with religious texts, I guess. Are they going to cut that out? Is that how we should end the podcast?
I think if you're going to practice bibliomancy, the best way to do it would be to find a book that really has meaning for you, that's changed your life. You know, something that's really impactful.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a religious text. It could be a book of poetry. It could be a nonfiction book. It could be a fantasy book that you read that you just were like, wow, this changed my outlook on everything ever.
Right?
Oh, you guys, I didn't even get to tell my other story.
Oh, shoot.
I forgot.
Yeah. Hey, let's wrap this up with Justin's story.
So, I mean, I guess this is why I said that don't do it with religious texts. When I was, I think, 13, I grew up in a church that my grandpa ran, LDS, out on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle one day started deciphering text in the Bible, and a big chunk of my family moved out of the state to get rid of the end of the world in 1997.
Oh, wow.
Because they bibliomancied. And they came up with their own time frame and their own signs inside the book. And yeah, that's how I like, that's the reason I actually left religion and haven't talked to my grandparents since I was 14.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I mean, it kind of was the end of the world then.
Yeah, I mean, that world,
the
that
end
connection.
Of part of the world, you know.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, they were a big part of my life. That's all the farm, that's all like the extra farm stuff I did was mm-hmm. was out on their farm. That's wow. where I spent my weekends. But,
wow.
you know, they got into it and then sold, we live in the Tri-Cities. They owned a ton of area on Road 68.
Mm, wow.
They built that airstrip out there. They were just instrumental to building the Road 68 property for farming.
Wow.
And sold all of that, put all of that work behind them and moved to Missouri.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it is. Kind
of so that's, I guess, a good explanation to why I made that shot at biblical texts is because it has affected me negatively and affected my family negatively, broke some relationships, you know?
Mm. Well, and I think that that's part of bibliomancy that's really important is the introspective part.
Yeah.
And really, because it's, I don't know, when I was reading about it, it doesn't seem like it's supposed to be like necessarily predicting the future.
Right.
It's supposed to be used for self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I guess some people probably do use it as prophecy, but some people use tarot cards as prophecy, and right. I think that's dumb too. So,
yeah, I feel it's like, in my opinion, I feel like it's more like for introspection, for like, and gaining some sort of enlightenment about something that's going on with you, or like to help have guidance for whatever situation or whatever, find guidance or whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm a hyper, hyper confident guy. You guys, everybody knows that about me. Mm-hmm. And I think that being confident enough to think that you can divine the future is a step past, like, because I have to throttle myself, right? Like, I think that's a lots of step past where, like, I find it problematic in myself. I just, so that, I mean, great for the self-confidence, but maybe roll it back a little bit.
Maybe roll it back a little bit.
You know what that makes me think of? Because there was another thing that that came up when I was doing my research about bibliomancy, which is called commonplacing. Have you ever heard of commonplacing?
Uh-uh.
So this is like much more, whereas like bibliomancy and even like journaling and things like that are very introspective. A commonplacing is like gathering information from like all the stuff that you read or hear or whatever into one book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like your own way of like note-taking, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
I heard about it when I was watching a YouTube video one time, and then it also came up when I was doing my bibliomancy research. So it's like if you... of something more mundane than magic or whatever. If you're like a gardener, right? And you read like, you know, 40 or 50 books all about gardening, and then you just like gather all the tidbits that are most important or like most helpful for you and your garden, or if you want to gather like recipes or whatever for vegetables
so
that you grow in your stuff.
It's basically
like
building a grimoire of information.
Of information, yeah.
Okay.
All on like a common topic. Yeah.
Like when I look to cook something that I've never cooked before, I look at all the recipes, I find out what's in common. Mm-hmm. I keep that for sure, because if all of them are saying it and they're publishing these recipes, that's probably right.
Right, right.
You know? And then that's how I build a lot of stuff. Everybody says don't do this one part. All these other parts are different, but everybody says don't do this one part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to do it. That's where I'm
right. Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I always read the actual comments on the recipes. Like,
same.
And so then people are like, oh, this was good, but I added like two extra like teaspoons of heavy cream or something, and then like somebody was like, oh, I took the advice to add the cream and it like really changed everything, and like I was like, maybe I'll put cream in it.
I feel like a good recipe is like a good base for a recipe.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to exactly time every 10 seconds for my foam.
Baking is science.
Oh yeah.
Baking is science. Cooking is just kind of doing whatever.
See, I don't bake. I don't bake at all. Baked cornbread
that's
out of
very,
a box yesterday. And
it's very different than cooking.
Yeah. I cook. I do not. Because you with like eggs, you can just do whatever you want.
I have recipes that I make constantly, just like over and over and over again, like stuff that I don't even look up a recipe card for, that I never actually make the same twice because I don't measure.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just like, oh, I put in some of this and I put in some of this and I taste the sauce to make sure that it's cooking right, and then I add a little bit of this and this, and so I don't have recipes I follow.
Right.
I just have like you need this meat, this veg, and like these five seasonings, and it just go ham.
Yeah, like how much salt did I add? Enough. That's how much I
that's
added
why you
it until
taste
it tasted
it as
right.
You're going.
Exactly.
You can't do that with baking.
That's why I don't do it.
Sometimes I use like a wine reduction in things, but sometimes I don't have the same brand of wine. So sometimes I use mead, or sometimes I use beer, or sometimes and it changes the flavor, but it's always good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Baking. Exactly.
My chili starts with whatever was on sale.
Yeah.
That's whatever peppers, whatever onions, because I'm getting a bunch of them, and I want them on sale.
One of my favorites is like a potato kielbasa and spinach dish.
Yo, that I know the dish.
Really good, but like, I don't always have the honey mustard, and I don't always have the brown sugar, and I don't always have like mm-hmm. certain parts, mm-hmm. so I just kind of like wing it.
Yeah.
I have an idea of what the sauce is supposed to taste like, and I just kind of make it.
Yeah. I mean, I've made that before, and I made it when the spinach was bad and everywhere, and so I made it with kale.
Yeah.
And it, you know, just yeah. whatever you...
I've mm-hmm. used bok choy instead of spinach. Works really well.
Yeah. yeah.
Now it's a cooking show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now we're like, no, it's yeah. a cooking podcast. No, but I just thought that was interesting, because it's like one of those things where I've done... sort of sometimes it's like I gather like quotes from like favorite authors yeah. or something in like journals and things like that, so
yeah, I like I that know, I like that though, just mm-hmm. like compiling the information that you've learned on a certain topic into one place
yeah
that you can reference. Mm-hmm. I like that a yeah. lot. That's really yeah. nice.
It was cool.
I think another note on bibliomancy I'd like to say, since I'm saying stuff, mm-hmm. is try to practice that positive positioning. Like, mm-hmm. if you are doing bibliomancy, try not to. Maybe if you are having a hard time in your life exercising positive positioning for yourself, mm-hmm. try to do it with your daily bibliomancy or right, whatever.
Like, yeah.
Try to in that moment, right? You can't always do it in the heat of the moment, but if you're divining, right? See mm-hmm. if you can't push that divination in the positive.
Well, and a lot of people that I've talked to who do divination of any form or fashion is always like, you don't want to do it if you're in a bad headspace.
Mm-hmm.
Because... again, it's going to impact how you read everything. It's going to impact how you interpret anything you come across your headspace. So you need to be in a good headspace to do it properly.
I wonder if that's part of where the like super calm, like super confident, like tarot card reader, like, you know, image comes from, is that they do force themselves into a calm.
Most people that I know who read tarot like professionally, who mm-hmm. who do it as a job for other people, they won't read tarot if they are having any kind of emotional crisis in their life.
Mm.
Like, if they have anything that's causing them to doubt themselves or be in a bad mood or be emotionally unstable, they just won't read it.
Sounds like my shop would have limited hours.
Yeah. Well, and it's just because...
Sarah's closed today.
Influences right. how you read stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
No, it 100% makes sense in that, but it makes sense for, like, the... you know, that stereotype to be that calm, you know, in control. Because mm-hmm. maybe you have mm-hmm. to be if you're going to be doing it the right way.
You know, whether or not you believe in magic or, tarot and all of that stuff, the idea behind it is if your emotions are out of control, you're going to affect how the tarot cards are pulled. And you're not pulling them for you, you're pulling them for somebody else. And so you can't let your emotions impact their questions. Mm-hmm. It is basically like you're channeling... but if you channel and you're in a garbage place, you're going to garbage their channel. Like, you know?
Yeah, you put clean water through a dirty filter.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to be zen.
I was like listening, but something you said sent my brain off in like an ADHD, like whatever.
I love this. This episode is just bibliomancy ADHD.
But I was like, what's
that? We're divining
that?
New topics.
Yeah, exactly. Right. All the time. Every... what is that thing? Because there's like a... it's something that our psyche does, like where we find patterns in things.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just pattern recognition.
Okay, yeah.
So it's actually, I don't think it's our psyche. It's just how our minds work.
We
force patterns together.
Yeah. And so it's making me think of like being in a good headspace when you're doing your divining, like whether you're doing bibliomancy or tarot or whatever. And another podcast that I listened to called By the Book, where they live by a self-help book for 2 weeks and then like report back on it.
Oh, God.
And they did some tarot book. Some book about tarot, and so they were doing daily tarot readings. And because she, one of the hosts of it, would pull a card, and you know, she didn't believe at all in like divination, or even she was kind of like, she's the Scully of the two, yeah, basically.
She's the standard skeptic.
yeah. But she would notice that when she pulled a card, that something would happen later in the day that made her think of that call. And then so then she, like by the end of the 2 weeks, was so neurotic about her pulling the card every day, because she's like, I didn't do it for 2 weeks. I said I would do it for 2 weeks, but she was like constantly making up more and more like complicated rituals before she did the reading.
She wanted the pull to be better.
To be good. She wanted it to be a good pull or whatever.
Oh my God.
It was just like...
And I mean, that's the problem. That's the problem with like, tarot and divination in general, is it's purposely vague
mm-hmm.
so that it can be related voted to by the most number of people. Mm-hmm. Because if you pull a card that says, oh, conflict or something like that, you have 24 hours and you have to interact with other humans.
So many other people.
You're going to come into a situation that has conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Almost guaranteed.
I can't make dinner without conflict.
like even if that's just like somebody tailgating you in traffic. Right, oh, my card was right. I'm in conflict.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah.
I say this as somebody who pulls tarot for myself very, very frequently. Calm down.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
That was just funny thing that popped in my head.
I love that.
I do too. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, this was a fun episode. Cool. I feel like we went all over the place.
I don't think it matters what we talk about. I think we have fun every
time. I think we do have fun every single time. Yeah. I kind of like it better when we don't stay on topic because we talk about some really interesting stuff.
I think so too.
Were we supposed to be trying to stay on topic?
What?
Was that the point?
No, not really.
I don't think from day one it has ever been the point.
I don't think that's our thing.
I mean, we are a warren, which is
exactly.
a nest of rabbits and rabbit holes and rabbit trails and, you know.
Yeah. Eventually we'll come back to the main topic, but we gotta, you know, explore the whole...
The whole range.
Whole network of...
The whole briar patch.
Exactly. All right. Awesome. This is fun. Okay. I guess we'll end it here then.
Okay.
Wait, how do we usually...
We usually just do this, where we just all trail off and laugh and have a great time.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventure Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows and soon many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.